You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
You want to know how I got these scars? My father was a drinker and a fiend. And one night, he goes off crazier than usual. Mommy gets the kitchen knife to defend herself. He doesn't like that. Not one bit. So, me watching, he takes the knife to her, laughing while he does it. He turns to me, and he says, "Why so serious?" He comes at me with the knife. "Why so serious?" Sticks the blade in my mouth. "Let's put a smile on that face." And why so serious?
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves.
Make love in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 94 for the 23rd of July, 2012. Here I am looking at the date scrambling. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Richard Gray. How are you, Richard?
Speak of the devil. And he will appear.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are reviewing The Dark Knight Rises. How are you, Richard? How's your week been?
My week has been fine.
I don't believe you can keep that up the whole show.
No, I probably can't.
Oh, no, I dropped my cup.
Oh, dear. That's a very good bane, though, I must say.
It's basically, if your kids want to play along at home, take one cup, plastic. If you've got metal, even better. Doesn't work as well with glass. If you put on your best Sean Connery accent, and then you place the cup over your face, and you have something resembling Bane.
And no, over the last couple of days, I've been hearing this impersonation a lot. You're actually starting to sound like an older and older man every time you do it. Bane's going to need a walking stick soon.
Dear. Well, but you know, that's
but I broke him. Sorry.
All right, this is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com, and yes, Josh is not here. Josh is away. He's having a nice weekend away in the mountains, so all his luck. So Richard, you and I are going solo. No, we're not solo because we're here together. We're going as a duo, dynamic duo. There you go. I have that sound effect somewhere, you know that? I don't, here it is. There you go.
Excellent.
Excellent. All right. I think
actually, I did too, now that I think about it.
I might have to crack out the old behind the panel soundboard for this show.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. All right. So, as we like to do on this show, we will get to the Dark Knight Rises a little bit later on. Bear with us. We do like to start this show off, as usual, with a what we've been watching section, just to fill in on the other things we've been watching. Now, I know you saw a preview tonight, but you're not allowed to talk about that yet, because I think that's actually next week's reviews.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I'll just mention that I saw it, which was Magic Mike.
Which I'm very jealous of. I want to see this film, so.
I'll just say that it is definitely worth going and seeing.
Excellent. Well, we'll actually review that. I think it's next week, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, it opens this week. It opens Thursday. So we will definitely review that for the next show. What else have you seen this week?
I caught up on a few things. I saw, and don't judge me for this, David, I saw the Katy Perry Part of Me documentary yesterday.
Uh-huh.
which is actually kind of good. I really enjoyed it. I'm not a fan in any way of her music, which I know is the excuse everyone has to use. Really, it's kind of like, you know, give me a song and dance number and some bright lights and shiny things and spinning bras, and, you know, I'm yours.
Oh, this is why. But no, actually, I'm surprised. Why didn't you like the Justin Bieber one then? It's bright lights and shiny bras, isn't it?
I didn't actually get to see the Justin Bieber one. There's another film I saw, but I've forgotten what it is. Hang on. Hold on, two shakes.
Okay, well, while you do that, I'll actually say that I actually have I'm not ashamed to say that I actually own a copy of the Justin Bieber documentary, yep. Never Say Never or whatever that thing's called. But I didn't buy it, so don't think I've never actually watched it. I won a copy. And it's just sitting on my shelf now, and I go, okay, I've won it, so what do I do now?
Well, I saw our feature film twice.
So did I, actually. So we're both coming at it with two viewings under our belts. So.
And I also saw Comic-Con Episode 4 of Fans Hope.
Oh, man, I'm so jealous. I want to see that.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I saw it at a mate's place who had a copy of it. And it is what it sounds like, and it follows four stories through Comic-Con, or four or five stories through Comic-Con, and some of them are better than others. Right. There's one guy whose story is that he collects toys, and that he wants to get, like, his quest this year is to get the Galactus toy, this big Galactus toy, and he gets in there, he runs straight to the counter, and he buys it, and his arc is pretty much over. but there's other guys, like there's two artists, and you know, one of whom is like really confident and thinks he's going to get picked up straight away, and that's not the case. And another guy who's not quite sure whether his stuff's any good, and he does a few showings, and they're like, "Dude, we're signing you up immediately."
Oh, really?
And you know, so there's all these sort of, and that's just like, you know, very early on in the film. But there's all these. The main story is about what Comic-Con's become.
Right.
And they follow through. If any of you have ever bought comics from Mile High Comics, you'll have read there's a guy named Chuck Rosansky who runs it. And this is pretty much the biggest comic place in America, if not the world. They've got a warehouse full of 8 million comics.
Oh, wow. Is this in New York?
No, his is somewhere in Texas, I think.
Oh, it's Texas, right.
Or there's maybe it's not Texas. His is in Colorado, I think.
Okay, there's a really huge comic book store in New York that my wife went to. That's where she bought my copy of Watchmen for me. She said it was really amazing.
Yeah, no, there's a few really big ones around there too. But this is, he follows them. He's really the voice of sort of wisdom that's been going, literally been going to Comic-Con for its entire existence.
Wow.
Gone every year. And but of course you get your regular people in there, like your Kevin Smiths and so forth. And there's one person who wants to propose to his girlfriend at the Kevin Smith talk, you know.
Right, right.
So there's all that sort of stuff happening. It's a lot of fun. And you'll probably spot yourself in there somewhere.
Of course. I think I'll sit by myself several times over.
Yeah.
No, look, I really want to see that. Do we have an Australian release for that yet?
No. Look, it's out on DVD and download in the States.
Right.
And this is where my friend got it from. He got it from an import copy.
Right.
But no, nothing here yet.
Damn it. Why do they treat these? Why do they treat the Morgan Spurlock films with such contempt over here?
We're a couple behind. The newer one, I think, which is about manscaping.
Oh, that looks hysterical. I want to see that. Yes.
Yeah, that's we're still waiting for that as well. So
yeah. No, that's ridiculous. Anyway, well, I actually go back and check some of the back archives on geekactually.com. You'll actually find an interview with Morgan Spurlock about Palm Wonderful when he brought that up, the greatest story ever sold. He's a great guy. He's really fun. I enjoyed interviewing him a lot. All right, so what have I been watching? Richard. See, God, he walks out for a minute and all hell goes to hell. Everything goes to hell.
I won't take it personally.
Richard, I finally caught up with American Pie Reunion, or American Reunion, or whatever
right.
it's called.
That was probably worth the wait.
I actually didn't hate it. It's kind of fun. It's far better than most of the crap that's come out of that series. It's kind of a nice finish to the first one. It's nowhere near the quality of the first one, but it was okay. It was okay. I think it was okay. That's the problem. Is it's okay.
There are some bits in there that are actually quite like laugh out loud funny.
Yes,
there are a few moments in there. There's one thing about I think the lacrosse team,
yes,
which made me lol very hard amongst a group of other kit critics. But I was okay because they were all lolling as well.
Mm. Look, there's actually a bunch of funny lines and there's some funny circumstances in it. But that's what American Pie has always done. It's the problem is it's just doesn't. It's I just don't know how interesting this group of people were together. In the first place, to have a reunion.
Oh, look, you know, I think that the first American Pie certainly There was, as weird as it sounds, there was an essential sweetness to it.
Yeah.
That you wanted to spend time with them. So when the sequels came along, you were like, yeah. And even they weren't very good. Even American Pie 2 is almost completely forgettable. And The Wedding was pretty bad.
The Wedding was awful.
Yeah, but even so, that core group of characters, you still... It was kind of like slipping back on an old shoe that had fallen apart, you know? It was kind of like, you know, I know this is no good anymore, but I just kind of have to keep wearing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Look, I didn't mind it, and it's always fun watching Eugene Levy do what Eugene Levy does. Mm. You know, so look, it's mildly amusing. It is worth a look. I don't think I would have wanted to have paid cinema dollars for it, but it's worth a look.
No.
The other one I saw this week was One for the Money. The Katherine Heigl film where she's a bounty hunter.
I didn't mind that at all.
And neither did I, funnily enough. It's very lightweight.
Of course.
It's got not a lot of substance at all, but she is just damn charming.
I thought so too, and I think it's a real shame that it didn't do well because I would have liked to have seen her in that series of films.
Based on a series of books, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that was her plan. She is the producer of the film. So I think she was really hoping to start a franchise here for her career. And that's not going to happen, considering I looked at the box office numbers on it. I think it actually made $5 million less than it cost to make.
It's a real shame.
Yeah. So I don't think it's going to actually spawn any sequels anytime soon. But it is fun. And it's actually available on iTunes and DVD and Blu-ray and so forth now. Well worth having a look at. The one I'm going to watch this week, I haven't watched it yet, but I really want to see, I think you've actually seen it, which is the spy film with Reese Witherspoon, where the two guys are trying to fight. What's it called?
This Means War.
I want to see it on Blu-ray though, because they've actually attached all three, alternate endings.
Ah, interesting.
So if you get it on Blu-ray, the Blu-ray edition has the three alternate endings, which were never released because the idea was to release it in cinemas with different endings and not tell anybody. And then they got cold feet at the last minute and didn't do it. So those alternate endings are on the Blu-ray. So I actually want to see that. I'm going to go pick that up this week.
I wouldn't mind seeing that as well, actually. Yeah,
and have a look. I still wish they had shot the fourth alternate ending.
Yes.
I read an interview with the boys in that, and they said that they had actually joked about shooting one more alternate ending where they actually ended up together.
That would have been brilliant.
But I don't think they ever actually shot it. I'm looking forward to that. So that'll be, I'll talk about that next week when I finally get around to seeing it. Well, with that all being said, we don't have a Josh's Bargain Basement because we don't have a Josh.
So we can pretend. In fact, I think we said on the comic show this week behind the panels, also available now on iTunes.
That's twice. I'm going to see how many times you can plug it.
Yeah, almost as many times as I'll plug the realbits.com.
Oh, there you go. Okay, that's one.
That's the REELBits.com.
That's two.
I think we joked over there on Behind the Panels, the comic show, that we killed Josh and locked him in the bargain basement.
Hang on. Should we have a look inside and see if he's there?
Let's just poke our heads in.
Okay, we'll just poke our heads in and have a look. Oh, shit. It was open already. Not in there.
It's dusty, though.
All right, let's get onto a feature review. I think we've put it off long enough. Let's talk about this damn movie. All right, so this is the movie that is probably was one of the most anticipated films by geeks all year.
It's a fair bet, that one.
Sorry?
It's a fair bet.
Yeah, it's a fair bet. All right, so The Dark Knight Rises, directed by Christopher Nolan, written by Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan, from a story by Christopher Nolan and David S. Goyer, of course, based on the characters by Bob Kane. Starring Christian Bale, Gary Oldman, Tom Hardy, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Anne Hathaway, Marion Cotillard, Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, Matthew Modine, Ben Mendelsohn, for the Australian listeners. Looking very old, can I tell you?
Yeah, he was looking quite old as well. I don't know if his name is listed in the credits you're reading out, but his partner in crime in the film was the guy from Torchwood.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't. Which guy from Torchwood? Oh, yes, it was too.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What do you know?
Also looking very old.
Also looking very old. I didn't even recognize him. We also have Juno Temple in there as well, we should mention. And we should also mention Nestor Carbonell, because he's been in the last two, so I guess he warrants a mention. This is the last time we'll be reading this cast list, so let's go to town. Who else is in this that I should be mentioning? Nobody? Okay, so according to IMDb, and for once I think they actually kind of nailed it without giving anything away, and they actually said, 8 years on, a new terrorist leader, Bane. Do your impression.
Oh, hang on.
I'm waiting for it.
Line.
Then you have my permission to die. There you go.
Then you have my permission to die.
There you go. Actually, you're more understandable, but we'll come back to that in the review. 8 years on.
I know.
A new terrorist leader, Bane, overwhelms Gotham's finest, and the Dark Knight resurfaces to protect a city that has branded him an enemy. That's all very dramatic. And it is very abbreviated. There is actually more that happens than that. Let's have a listen to the trailer, and then we will come back and we will talk about The Dark Knight Rises.
There's a storm coming.
You sound like you're looking forward to it.
I'm adaptable.
I'm Gotham's reckoning.
Did they kill him?
I'm not sure.
Huh. Why didn't you just kill me? Your punishment must be more severe.
Do you think he's coming back?
I don't know.
Why would you run, Bane?
You should be as afraid of him as I am.
I won't bury you. I've buried enough members of the Wayne family.
You don't owe these people anymore. You've given them everything.
Not everything. Not yet.
My mother warned me about getting into cars with strange men.
This isn't a car.
She says she's adaptable. She's also very flexible. Can I just say that?
Yes, she is.
Yes, she is. All right. That is actually one of the most depressing downbeat trailers of them all. There is actually another trailer that I looked at originally, the last trailer that came out, which is actually really upbeat and lots of action, and they don't say a goddamn word in it. So I couldn't play for an audio show.
I've already buried enough members. A Wayne family.
I hear Bane's voice now, and all I can do is hear you and your cop.
I know. did you notice in the trailer he's far more understandable than he is in the film?
Yeah, because that came out shortly after the IMAX preview came out, and everybody complained, so they boosted all his dialogue. Why didn't they do that for the rest of the film? I don't know. Anyway,
imagine if it was Michael Caine. As Bane. I'll work on that and get back to you later.
I need to hear that. Yeah. All right. So you need to work on that. All right. So, Richard, after all the wait, we've both seen it twice. What did you think? What did you think of The Dark Knight Rises?
It's a pile of crap. No, it was. In a lot of ways, this is kind of the big end that we expected.
Right.
You know, but in other ways, it's kind of necessarily an anticlimax as well, because it's the end of this big saga that literally redefined a character. Mm. And regardless of how it was going to turn out, and let me just say up front, it turned out pretty well. But I do have problems with it. Regardless of how it turned out, it was always going to be pre-burdened with that huge expectation we had, which is why I went and saw it a second time before the show.
I went to see it a second time because I need to take my son to it as well, but I actually really wanted to see it a second time because the first time you see any film like this, even like The Avengers and like this one, you're basically going on a hype wave. Yes. And the second time you go see it, you go, okay, I've seen it. I know what to expect. Now I can actually just watch the film and actually figure out what's going on and what's right and what's wrong with this film. Both of us have seen it twice, and I think it was a very smart move.
Now, the problem I had with the film remains in the second viewing, though, is that this isn't reason enough alone to dislike a film, because I've liked films longer than this, but it's a 2-hour-and-45-minute film. That is a lot of fat. You know, that's a long film. And now I think you said it, David, over on the comic show, obviously they went into this expecting to have a really big, epic film. And obviously they gave Nolan permission to make a very, very big film. And only then would he have permission to die. let's face it, when you look back at the trilogy, Batman Begins is an almost perfect film, but it's not quite perfect. The Dark Knight had some problems, and one of those problems was when Christopher Nolan went off and started making other films inside The Dark Knight, one of which was two groups of extras on boats that took us completely away from Batman and Joker, which was the focus of that film, really. Mm-hmm. That's what we turned up for. This film does the same thing. And I'm borrowing someone's line here because I'm not quite sure who said it, but call me old-fashioned, but I kind of expect my Batman films to have a lot more Batman in them.
That actually is, I believe I heard a quote very similar to that when Batman Returns came out, because Batman Returns had so little Michael Keaton Batman in it that, and they had everybody else, they're all going, can I have Batman in my Batman movie? Yeah.
The thing is with that film, I mean, that was a second movie as well, but this one, and this isn't necessarily a complaint in and of itself, but there is this very, very, very long – actually, no, it is a complaint. There's this very long second act to the film. The first act delays the appearance of both Bruce Wayne and Batman to create that suspension of the delaying of pleasure, so when it does happen, you do want to actually stand up and cheer.
Yeah.
And you almost do, because it is a real hero moment when Batman first appears on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Then that story kind of wraps up fairly quickly, and then you're left with this hour or so, and we won't spoil it yet because we'll have a spoiler section later, but you're left with this hour or so where you're taken not just outside of Batman's story and outside of that, taken right outside of Gotham with other characters that we've not met before.
And one of them played magnificently by Tom Conti, who I love.
Yes, of course.
But
even so.
But not necessary.
But not necessarily. And then you have this long hour of boardroom meetings a forced police drama is in there. You have a sort of somewhat forced commentary on the Occupy movement, which kind of seems to miss the point. You have a whole lot of villainous planning before you actually return to the title fight, which is what we paid to see.
Exactly. I think you and I talked about this the other night when I said, when you look at the structure of a film like this, when you're talking about a comic book movie or an action movie, even if, let's forget the comic book aspect of it, when you look at the structure of an action movie, you have your build-up, which is your soul-searching moment where do I or don't I, basically. And then when you have the big reveal where he basically, the hero is born, and you all stand up and cheer, as you say, that's the starting point for the second half of the movie, which is the hero is born and he's going to go fight the bad guys, right? The problem with this film is that it has a lot of soul searching to build up to it. We have the big hero is reborn moment. We go, yay, he's back, and then go back into more soul searching.
Yeah, and it's almost as though he's got two origin stories in this film, and we already had an origin story. So this is meant to be the conclusion, but it's almost as though he's starting something new And he's almost building. It's almost as though he kind of threw away the first two films and said, right, I'm putting everything into this film and making it trying to be like its own standalone film. But it's not, because as you pointed out to me, it's so dependent on the other two at this point.
Yeah, and it's something that the first two films didn't have. The first two films could both be seen in isolation. And you would go, okay, they're both great films. If you saw them together, they worked together, but they also worked as isolated films. You can't see this film without having seen both of the first two films. Because there is so much referencing of lines and bits and even characters in the first two films. If you haven't seen them, you would have no idea the relevance of it.
And look, there's so many characters in this film as well that they already had this huge cast of characters to draw from, you know. But they take two of the more memorable characters from the first two films, and I'm talking specifically about Gary Oldman's Commissioner Gordon and Michael Bloody Cade's
<It's> Alfred.
Alfred. And sideline them for much of the film. Now, to me, that relationship between Bruce Wayne's almost two de facto father figures, which were Commissioner Gordon on one side, who was kind of like the law enforcement father figure that he wanted, because he did actually, and it's referenced in the film, that the moment where you know Jim Gordon actually put his coat around him in the first film, and said everything's going to be okay. You know, it was almost like, you know, his father saying to him, why do we pick ourselves up, Bruce, you know?
Mm-hmm. Also referenced in this film.
Also referenced in this film.
Yeah.
And Michael Caine, of course, who, again, also referenced in this film, who has literally known him since he was born.
Yeah.
And has been as close a thing to a father as Bruce Wayne will have since the death of his own father.
Yeah.
Now, both of those characters are then sidelined. Mm. Quite literally, in the case of one of them, doesn't turn up again until the final scenes.
Yeah, which I thought was ridiculous. I mean, I could understand the point that was trying to be made by the character, but really, as far as the film was concerned, we wanted to see more.
Mm, and where was the thing is too? I mean, did he? We'll talk about this in the spoilers. But yeah. Did he leave town completely during the section? Did he just? I don't know.
He's off in that little Italian cafe that he likes
so much. The whole time. Yeah, he's just sitting drinking a hell of a lot of that little drink. look, the other thing is just quickly while we're on the subject of character, and this all sounds like complaints because I want to move on to positive stuff in a minute, but one of the things that I found was some of the characters I found a little bit superfluous. Now, Anne Hathaway's Catwoman, as we said, is very flexible.
She is
very attractive in that skin tight catsuit. And every shot where she's on a motorbike is fantastic for a number of reasons. but I actually found her role somewhat superfluous. Now, I know she's there because it's the whole. There's a reason that she's there, and it's partly.
We'll delve into it in spoilers more detail, but
on a broader arc, it's to give Bruce Wayne, Batman, someone to give a clean slate to. You know, someone who he sees as not quite sort of going down the same path he might have gone down, but being able to stop them before they do something wrong. You know,
right.
That's kind of on a broader dramatic arc. But the problem was the way they constructed her. They introduced Juno Temple's character, and I love Juno Temple. I think more movies that she's in, the better.
They gave her nothing to do in this film.
But they gave her nothing to do. And I felt as though they were setting her up, setting her and Hathaway up for a potential Catwoman film.
Yeah, that worked so well the last time they tried this.
Yeah, I know, exactly. But but of course they didn't try and build it off the back of an existing universe.
Hmm.
The only problem is if they try to do that Catwoman film with Juno, they'd have to make it a prequel to show how those two got together, or they're going to have to somehow acknowledge the ending of this film in any future Catwoman.
I think
it would
have to be a prequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and when you see this film, you'll know. I mean, they wrap things up with a big old bow, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's one other issue I had with it, that it does try to wrap things up too neatly. But all that said, magnificently staged action.
Agreed. No, and I think Nolan really knows how to put that together. Look, yeah, you're right. We've been sounding like we're very, very negative. I think on the upstroke is I really actually enjoyed the film. I had a ball watching the film. And at 3 hours, almost 3 hours long, I was never actually bored. either time. So the running time isn't overwhelming. I just felt that you could have trimmed an easy 45 minutes out of this film and pretty much had a really tight film, then you wouldn't have lost much. I don't agree with you that Catwoman is superfluous, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in spoilers. I think there's more to her than you give her credit for. And God, she's just so damn good to look at. so I have no problem with that. I had real issues with the sound mix on this film. Bane, for all the criticism that came about not being able to understand him, it's kind of true. It's they could have fixed it so easily in post, but Nolan actually said in a couple of interviews that he wanted the audience to work hard. I don't think any audience should have to work that hard.
My persimmons are to die for.
I'm going to footnote our good friend Dwayne Lennox on that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. So you understand literally every second line out of his mouth, except for the ones that he really punctuates, like, you know, what's in the trailer when he says, "Then you have my permission to die," you know?
Yeah. It's like, there are scenes, and in fact, it was around that scene where I actually found myself wondering what he was saying in the second half of that speech.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, I'm sure there are a few American listeners listening to me now going, "What the hell is he talking about?" I can't understand his accent, that crazy Australian. you know, when you have I don't like to reference the comic too much because they are separate entities, but when you have a character that was so intelligent and so well spoken in the comics, and it's clearly they're trying to paint him as such in this,
yep,
to have him completely unintelligible for much of the film lessens the character somewhat. And there are other ways this film actually diminishes the character, but again, we'll talk about that in
spoilers. I got big things to talk about with that, but anyway, we'll come back to that. Overall, though, I actually really enjoyed this film. My 13-year-old son adored this film. He really liked it. He didn't think it was as good as the first one, and I agree with him. I think the Batman Begins is still, and this is going to be sacrilegious to a lot of people who actually love The Dark Knight, but I still think Batman Begins is the best of the trilogy. Purely because it is the most well-rounded film as a whole, and it's a damn good origin story. I love Dark Knight. Don't get me wrong. I saw Dark Knight 4 times at the cinema. I love Dark Knight, but I love Dark Knight because of Heath Ledger. I was mesmerized by Heath Ledger. I think The Dark Knight actually has structural problems. And that's, you know, and once again, it's actually a little bit too long.
Agreed.
As well, and as you said, it comes down to literally, you know, and also that's actually a really interesting point that you bring that up about the boats in The Dark Knight with the two separate groups of people, the convicts and so forth, and how it all comes down to a choice, because Christopher Nolan actually in this film, without giving anything away, he actually counters that argument.
Yeah, that's true, and I actually found its politics somewhat not just ambiguous but weird, because it is seemingly a missive on the Occupy movement, even though the Occupy movement was happening shortly after the filming was taking place. But that whole kind of grassroots movement, and even though it's kind of he talks throughout most of the film about the 1% versus the 99%. When the 99% actually do rise up, it's seen as something that needs to be crushed because they can't handle the power and that they suddenly have.
Which is
the opposite to the message at the ending of The Dark Knight.
Which was that common decency would actually take the better of people.
Yeah, that when people are given a choice, they generally make the right one, and that's kind of like, you know, that's why he got away with it in The Dark Knight, spending all that time with extras. Here, it seems to be very, very mixed politics, and it is a intensely capitalist film then at its core, if you take it at that surface level viewing, because I'm not exactly sure what he's saying beyond that in terms of that grassroots movement. So I found that very, very strange. In terms of the bomb that you referenced, the boats, they both films end with a bomb threatening to go off.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Absolutely.
I was setting it up for you, David.
Thank you.
You know, and I almost expected someone to come out and go, "Is it the red wire or the green wire?" Yeah.
Although we did have a digital readout. Let's not forget the digital readout.
Yeah, instead of an actual ticking clock at the end of this. Look, again, I want to say the same thing as David. I'm sounding very negative, but I actually still love the film. I still like the film enough to see it a second time.
Putting this into context, I mean, I didn't have as many little niggly gripes about the Avengers as I had about this film. And I think that's the issue, is the fact that we look at this film and we go, it's great entertainment, but there was so much expected from it, and it just kind of misses the mark several times. And you sit there going, oh, it could have been so easily fixed.
You know what I mean? Agreed, absolutely agreed.
And I think that's the most frustrating part, is there's just a few little bits and pieces where you sit there and go, oh, you were so close.
Oh, can we say one thing? Because you've spoken about this at length, the score.
Yes.
A little overbearing?
A little overbearing. Once again, this comes down to the sound mix. There's a couple of sequences in it where you'll have people talking as they're walking, basically. You know, your Aaron Sorkin moment. And the music starts to swell, and you literally can't hear what they're saying, because this music is just overpowering and drowning out everything. And it's not even a clear score. I mean, that's the one thing. The other thing is, I mean, I'm a big soundtrack collector, and I'm really big onto film scores. The first two Batman films, in particular, the first Batman film, scored by Hans Zimmer and James Newton Howard together. And it's a really clear score. It's got a great motif running through it with the Batman theme and so forth. Continued on into The Dark Knight, the same duo. Joker had a really interesting, the first track, Why So Serious, is an awesome track. And it's got the same sort of Batman motif. There was no clear motif in this film. The score was muddy, and I put part of that down to the fact that it's only Hans Zimmer this time. James Newton Howard has obviously gone off to do something else. Hans Zimmer has taken over, and he's kind of done what he did to Pirates of the Caribbean. If you remember Pirates of the Caribbean, Claus Bedelt wrote the original score for the first Pirates. Hans Zimmer came in and took over for the second two, and the second two were underwhelming. It was like a very poor quality carbon copy of the first one.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I felt about the music on this one. It's still there. There's still that Batman theme. But I've been listening to the soundtrack, and there's no clear track where you go, oh, that's an awesome track. It all just kind of sounds the same all the way through. And that's kind of how I've been feeling a little bit about Hans Zimmer in general over the last few films that he's done. I think the Zimmer movement that started with all the Bruckheimer films in the 90s, I think has kind of come to an end.
Yeah, he's the guy that you go to when you can't get James Newton Howard.
Oh, that's cold. That's cold. But yeah, and then
who's who you go to when you can't get, you know, John Williams?
Yeah, there is that. And then, of course, then you've got the next problem, which is that this mix is atrocious. I mean, we've got Bane barely audible. You've got I was saying to my son afterwards, I said, I found it really amusing that you've got Christian Bale growling all of his dialogue. Yeah. You've got Bane basically talking into a tin can and can't understand anything he's saying, and you've got Anne Hathaway whispering everything. So in the end you're kind of going, huh? What? What? Who said what? All the way through the film. But that all being said, once again, I have to stress, I actually really enjoyed this film.
Look, we're just nitpicking now. At the end of the day, and I want to say this is the thing, and as we wrap this thing up, what Christopher Nolan has achieved with this trilogy of films is amazing.
Yes.
It's an amazing set of Batman films that, taken together, are as good as any of the best comics, or as good as any of the best superhero films out there. And in fact, very few trilogies are as strong taken together as Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy. Unfortunately, the final part is the weakest, as is often the case, because all the things that we loved about the first two films have already been done.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and so he comes to the third one, as we've said, having to repeat himself twice within the film with two more origin stories, effectively. And so you've got this kind of anticlimax built into it. Other than that, you actually have, and the last 30 minutes of this film, as we've said, is magnificent, as good as anything in any other blockbuster this or any other year. So it finishes on a bang, but there's also a fair bit of dare I say, whimper in there as well.
Yeah, I agree. Look, somebody asked me yesterday, I think it was, when they said, what did you finally think of Dark Knight Rises? And I will pass on my review here as to exactly what I said to them, which is, I thought it was a really good film and a really fitting conclusion to a very good trilogy. It is not a standalone film. And for that, it loses marks because it doesn't stand on its own. But as a conclusion to the trilogy, it's awesome. You know, it's like we've been building to this. Great, let's do it. And now we can sit down and we can watch all three Batman films in a row and really enjoy that story arc. You know,
absolutely. I agree with you.
And I think that's the best I can do. And I do recommend if you've seen the other Batman films, this is must see. If you haven't seen the other Batman films, go watch Batman Begins.
It's Batman Begins is still going to remain for years one of the best superhero films, maybe after Superman the movie.
Definitely after Superman the movie for me. I thought Batman Begins was awesome, and I think this is not quite there. I also had this is actually an issue I had with Dark Knight, not this one, but the last one. Can anybody out there explain to me why they completely radically changed the world?
I know what you mean.
Christopher Nolan came along and he invented this world, this great Gotham City with the elevated train network that was going into Gotham Tower, going into Wayne Tower, and it had the narrows with Arkham Asylum and also, and it was kind of gothic looking with still being real world. And then when Dark Knight came out, he just junked all of that stuff. There was never a mention of the narrows. The elevated trains were gone. It just looked like a city. And that's what continued on to this film. And I just look at it and go, what happened?
Well, destroyed the elevated train in the
Well, he destroyed one track.
Yeah.
there's a whole train network there. You know, it's like saying, yeah, we destroyed the Eastern line out here, so all the trains are gone.
they couldn't. Someone just got really – exposition guy got really upset. Have you noticed that in every Christopher Nolan film there's an exposition guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, like in the first movie there was that guy who was like, the train's heading straight towards the tower. If it hits the tower, it'll explode. If it explodes, then the whole thing will fall.
Now, that guy that was the exposition guy in Batman Begins, he was in Superman the movie, wasn't he?
Was he?
Yeah, he was one of the
exposition guys.
I think he was an exposition guy. No, he wasn't an exposition guy in that. He was actually in, I think, if my memory serves me, I've got to remember, he's in the missile silos.
Mm.
He was one of the guys sitting next to Cliff Clavin. Because if you remember, Cliff Clavin was in the missile silos as well from Cheers. But I think he was actually in Superman the movie as well. When I saw him, I went, there you are.
There's still a lot of. Everybody takes the time to explain just about everything.
Yeah, yeah. Look, that's a good film.
And I think I need to get into this spoiler section because there's a couple of gags I'm yet to make.
All right, here we go. We're going into spoilers as usual. When we hit the spoiler section, we are ripping into this thing and there's no holds barred. So if you have not seen the Dark Knight Rises yet, skip over. The time codes will be in the show notes on the newly redesigned geekactually.com. So go find our show notes. And you can actually skip over the spoiler section. We will clearly mark it with the sound, which is going to come up in just a second. If you have seen Dark Knight Rises and want to hear what our thoughts are on some of these spoilers, continue on with us. Here we go, Richard. All right, we're in safety now.
Excellent.
I'm going to start this off and just basically say, way to neuter your bad guy.
Yeah.
This was a really big issue for me because we set Bane up as basically being this super kingpin, super intelligent, formidable bad guy who is in complete control of everything he does until the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, when we're in spoiler section.
Yeah, people. We're in spoilers, so go for it.
So when it's revealed that that Miranda, the love interest throughout the film, is in fact Talia al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul's daughter.
Yep.
And Bane is actually her minion, which actually reduces him, as you rightfully pointed out to me before the show, David, reduces him to nothing more than a henchman. Which is not much better than his portrayal in Batman and Robin, in which case.
I know, and we went from this really powerful character to, oh, look, one little pipe's been knocked out of his mask, so suddenly he's on the ground helpless, and she's basically stroking his head like he's a child. And it's like, what just happened? I sat there going, oh, my God, what just happened? We just completely neutered our super bad guy. In one fell swoop. That actually really irritated me.
I've got a few little niggles in here. There's a few weird things.
Go for it.
There was, first of all, there's a few continuity errors in here. And I think it's one of those films that's so big and so bombastic that you don't think that we sometimes don't think we're going to notice.
Yeah.
One of which was the fact that the robbery of the stock exchange,
right,
or the hold up of the stock exchange, was clearly taking place during the day.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
And then they hop on their bikes, they go outside, they go through the underground tunnel thing. At which point Batman turns up, they come out the other end and it's nighttime.
And
so obviously that cannon thing that he had was really powerful.
And then of course when they came out of the stock exchange,
it's really dark in here.
Yeah.
it wasn't even dark when they came out of the stock exchange. It was still light when
it was actually only once we saw it on TV. And suddenly it was dark on TV. It was like nighttime. It was like, wait. What happened? The last film that tried to do this and didn't get away with it in my books was actually X-Men Last Stand, the third X-Men film.
Because
they're walking across the Golden Gate Bridge. It's broad daylight. Magneto uses his powers, lifts the bridge off, and then suddenly the bridge comes into Alcatraz, and they all climb off, and it's nighttime. And you go, it's like, so the time it took you to fly the bridge from there to there, it got nighttime.
You know? In which case, you know, they could have had a fleet there to stop
you. Exactly. It's like sometimes these transitions between day and night don't work very well.
Some of the other things just amused me more than continuity ones just amused me more than anything. Like the fact that there's a point where Batman turns back up, they're all walking out on some ice, and he says, throw down the flare, throw it down. Light it up. Apart from the fact that, as you pointed out, he's asked Commissioner Gordon to throw down a flare onto the really fragile ice that was about to break anyway. throws it down. It sparks off a stream of flames, and it goes up. And in a magnificent moment in the film, it's a really great moment, a big bat signal kind of flames up on the side of a building. Now, I like to imagine that in the time Bruce Wayne spent getting back from, you know, the outer rims where he was being held in prison for, you know, who knows how long, trying to rehabilitate himself back into the world, he's taken the time to paint a giant bat symbol on the side of a building in some sort of flammable liquid.
How?
Perfectly formed. Yeah,
perfectly formed. I just want to know how he actually got up there. Can you imagine you could see him up there with his little paintbrush hanging off of a, like, you know, a painting? We go,
little overalls on.
Meanwhile, people are dying while he's doing this.
No, I've got to be a single. Big symbol.
Big symbol. Bigger. I agree with you. I thought that was actually, I mean, it looks fantastic, but it's silly.
And one final one. And it's one that I can't get past because I don't know. I mean, it's possibly trickery somewhere along the line. But right. At what point does he jump out of that bat plane?
Okay, we've come to the crunch, have we? Which is the actual ending of this film.
Yeah.
All right. So he drags the nuclear bomb.
Which I should say he bangs about 50 times.
He drags it across the ground, bangs it against the walls. You know, he drags it out into the bay to save the city. Now, he drags it out about 5 miles. I vaguely remember them saying about 5 miles, and there's a huge mushroom cloud. So, in other words, the fallout from that explosion is now just going to blow back into the city because it's in the bay.
I've saved the city for about 20 years.
For about 20 years until all their hair starts falling out. Yeah. But we also then somehow, magically, we saw the magic little LED timer. So we actually saw it counting down. And when it ticked over to like 1 second, we got a shot of him inside the bat, inside the plane. When exactly did he get out? Is the
question. Even if he bailed then. He'd still
be vaporized. Yeah, he would have been vaporized.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you on that. I had a few issues with the timing of that.
And you know what? One of the things about this whole thing is that the stakes were raised so high in this film that I'm not even sure it was a Batman film anymore. No, honestly, because how often does Batman have to fight against nuclear bombs?
That's true.
It's no longer about Gotham and protecting the city and whatever. I mean, of course, any hero in the city is going to protect the city against a nuclear bomb.
Mm.
The previous thing had been about protecting Gotham from the very things that killed his parents. I could be mistaken, but I don't think his parents had a nuke dropped on him in an hour.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That's like, the retcon version of it. I always get that mixed up.
There seemed to be, to me, that the stakes in this film, they felt they had to go bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where I'm not sure if they actually knew how to get themselves out of it.
I think that's exactly it.
And I think that's actually a bit of a... And for a guy who is as clever as Nolan, I'm surprised he couldn't figure out a better way to get him out, but he just couldn't quite do it. And then we go from that to, and I don't know, we disagree on this, but I think a really twee ending.
No, I don't disagree with you. I think it is a twee ending, but I didn't mind it too much.
It's all kind of twee. It's all kind of like, oh, look, isn't this nice? It's all wrapped up and all these people are happy. You know, and it's like really
it's super happy ending.
Super happy ending. Put a bow on it.
It's like at the end of Wayne's World, you know, when they can punch out the three or four. Yes.
So there was a couple of issues with that. But I think the bigger issue for me was, yes, the nuclear bomb I thought was a little bit silly. I mean, his escape from that was almost as ludicrous as Indiana Jones getting in the fridge.
Oh, maybe he had a fridge in the back.
Maybe there's a cooler or something in the back he could climb into.
Going to the cooler.
So I agree with you. I think the painting of the bat symbol
is coming.
Sorry, it's
ooh,
to do that.
That's in bad taste.
Actually, I would have liked to have seen him blow up out over the thing, and they thawed out his body 60 years later.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And then he joined the Justice League.
I actually really, when he flew off and he blew up, I almost cheered. I went, they did it. They're going to kill him off.
Yeah.
And I thought that would have been brilliant. Mm. I didn't need the little twee ending at the end.
No.
I think the fact that they unveil the statue and then you've got the Joseph Gordon-Levitt moment and so forth, and you could have ended it just like that. Mm. You know, and you
it's like he'd finally done what he set out to do, make the bat a symbol of hope.
And he hints at it. There's that one line from Catwoman where she goes, you've given them enough. He goes, I haven't given them everything yet.
Yes.
And then he would have given them everything. He would have given him his life, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been a really iconic ending to this whole trilogy. But they wimped out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, I really, really hoped. I really thought. I said to everyone going into this, they're someone's going to die, either Bruce Wayne or Batman.
Yeah. Somebody, I think they just kind of wimped out, and it bugged me a little bit.
And the fact that they killed off Bruce Wayne, but not really, the fact that they killed off Batman is kind of almost counter to the rest of the thing, because Batman was meant to be an eternal symbol.
Exactly. Which we kind of have with the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character.
But then it's implied that he may not be Batman. He might be his own hero. Like, it's basically saying Gotham's in safe hands now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. So he can go off and, you know, drink, wine coolers in Florence, sort of.
All right, so Tom Conti and his fellow cellmate helping him go through his second major soul-searching moment. Tom Conti was great.
Passa.
Exactly. What's that mean? Rise. I thought Tom Conti was wonderful. His beautiful hangdog self that he always plays.
There's some great moments in that, but I just thought that whole middle sequence went on far too long.
No, and I actually said, we talked about this on panels, where I said they should have used the Bane
origin story
from the comic books as an opener with that prison and not gone back there.
And if anybody's ever wanting to read that, the issue is called Batman Vengeance of Bane, 64-page special number one.
And you can hear us talk all about that on Behind the Panels podcast.
There you go.
Which is out now. All right. I don't think I have anything. Do I have anything else to add to this?
No, you don't.
No, I don't think I do. I think I'm bitched out. I did actually like the film. Can I just say that one more time?
Yeah, no, I want to add that I did like the film as well.
Yeah.
If you go to my site, you'll see that my mark is a pretty good one, but I think I justify all the comments that I've made here today.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like I don't want to ever be seen as that blind fanboy like I was with the Avengers. I admit I had blinders on for the Avengers, but I don't want to be seen as that blind fanboy where I just go, no, I have to accept it because it is. And that's what a lot of people are doing. I mean, I have seen some ludicrous reviews for Dark Knight Rises.
I've seen reviews that have, I think you've said, like, almost deified this film. And there were people who had gone into the film saying this is going to be the best movie ever made.
Exactly.
I've not often seen reactions to this before a film came out. There were people, like, you know, when the critics' reviews went up, there were people going, what are you talking about? This is going to be the greatest film ever. You don't know anything. It's like, well, none of these people had seen it yet, and they were already prejudging the film and already bashed it. There was actually – Rotten Tomatoes actually had to close its comment section down because someone who gave it a mediocre review, not a bad review, but a mediocre review, a mediocre score, I should say. The review was fine. You know, they actually were bashing him for saying he was wrong, even though none of them would have had a chance to see this film yet.
I know, it's ridiculous. Same thing happened when The Dark Knight came out. Remember when The Dark Knight came out and everybody hammered IMDb on the user reviews to the point where it actually scored higher than The Godfather? And everybody was saying, that can't be.
But they balance out over time.
Yeah, they do. But there's those initial bursts. I mean, I think there was one of our fellow critics who actually gave it 6 out of 5.
That's true.
You know, and I've literally seen...
I don't know how you put that in a Rotten Tomatoes meter.
No. And I've actually literally seen reviews online from the States where they're basically saying it is one of the greatest pieces of cinema ever put on film. And if you don't see this, it's un-American.
If you take all three films together, I would agree with that comment. I would say, except for the un-American bit, but I would say all three taken together is one of the greatest pieces of cinema ever put together.
Look, it's a great piece of cinema. I just don't want to be seen as raising Dark Knight Rises onto a pedestal just because we should, you know? And there are enough problems with the film that it isn't the masterpiece that people would like it to be. It is a great conclusion. Let's be very clear. But it's not the most brilliant film ever made, you know?
No.
It's got some great stuff in it. Anyway, let's get out of the spoiler zone.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, here we go. That last 5 minutes of conversation could have been out of the spoilers.
It probably could have.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. We're back. All right, so...
Oh, good for you!
Hey, there's the man.
He just popped in to say hi.
Hey, hi. He's criticizing our critique. There you go.
Yeah.
All right, so that's... And we usually sum up by saying, would you recommend it? But I'm not even going to bother with this because, of course, we're going to recommend it. And we're going to say, go out and see it. Of course, you've got to go see it. It's a visual spectacle. It's Nolan. It's Batman. It's everything that, you know, it should be. And it's well worth having a look at. So,
if
you know.
If you don't see Batman, you've got to see more Batman, and all of life's questions are answered in Batman.
There you go. But before we depart for the night, we do have our lists. And there is in The Dark Knight Rises, trying not to spoil here because we're out of the spoiler zone, but there is a pretty spectacular explosion or series of explosions. You actually see part of it in the trailers.
Yes.
And it got us thinking, what are our 5 favorite movie explosions? So that's our list. 5 great movie explosions. And Richard, start me off. What you got?
I will start you off with a little bit of Independence Day. Now, it's not the obvious explosion.
Okay.
Which is the one everybody knows is the White House explosion. I think the far more impressive explosion in that film is the Empire State Building exploding.
And can I tell you, it's higher on my list.
I thought it might be.
It's so true. I actually pondered the White House as well because the White House is the classic, and it is by far a brilliant explosion. But that Empire State Building, that the whole tower being taken down, is stunning.
Oh, it's amazing! Yeah. And there's a fireball down the street and all sorts of things. We'll talk about it when we get to yours.
Okay, it's a little bit higher on my list. It's an amazing sequence. My number 5 actually starts small.
Okay,
it's actually a very little explosion. It's the impact that it had, which my explosions get bigger. But my first one is actually from Mission Impossible 3 on the bridge, when the little drone shoots its rocket and hits that car, which explodes, and the force kicks Ethan Hunt off his feet and into the side of a car because of the sheer impact of the explosion. That sequence has such impact on me, and it's a very little explosion, but it had a lot of effect, and I really like that. So that's why I start small, but we get bigger.
Well, I stay number quite small with my number four as well, okay. Which is, I tried to think a little left field, which was Scanners, the head explosion.
Oh, good call. That would have been that would have been a Josh call.
It would have been a Josh call. That would have been this is my one here for Josh in spirit.
There you go. Actually, Josh has been trying to get me to get that sound effect for a while.
I know.
Put it on the soundboard. I will get it eventually. My number four is Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. It's the Praxis explosion in the opening scene with that amazing pink shockwave that goes out.
Shields!
Great stuff. Okay, you're number three.
Staying in space, Return of the Jedi, second Death Star exploding.
I can go with that, yeah. Because I thought about the Death Star and forget the special editions. The original Death Star exploding was actually kind of weak.
Yeah.
It's just a bit of a puff of sparks.
But when I was looking up some explosions to refresh my memory, when I was reading something about the second Death Star one and I agreed with it, was that there is this sense of actual anticipation and real danger and threat with the second Death Star exploding. And the first one, it's kind of like, you know, Luke has to shoot off two missiles, they're in, it explodes, and he's gone. With this one, he's just such a poor lover. in this one, it's like, you know, the Death Star explodes, and then they've got to get out of the thing before it blows up, and they've got to get clear.
That's true.
And things are being engulfed as they're going thing, and you see the massive explosion, not just from space, you see it from Endor as well, and all these things are happening simultaneously. And also, Luke's got to get out. He's got to hop in there, and he's just defeated Darth Vader, and he's got to hop in a shuttle and get out as well. So all that's happening simultaneously while this explosion's going on.
It's a really good sequence. It's a good explosion, a good sequence. And you've actually got that sense of scale because it's actually only half built. You're seeing the little explosions happening inside it and stuff.
That thing's operational.
My number three is Independence Day. So we're there.
Empire State Building explosion.
Is it the actual Empire State Building? I thought it was a different building.
I thought maybe it's the...
Oh, no, that's right. It is the Empire State Building. It's the L.A. building I'm thinking of as well.
Yeah.
They're all on the roof of that building in L.A. That's right. So there's a couple of different buildings blowing up. Yes, no, the Empire State Building, where you actually see the beam go through it, and all the debris is kicking off of it all the way down. And then
it's amazing.
It's an amazing sequence. It really is. That whole sequence from the White House being destroyed all the way through to the fireball is just an amazing piece of cinema.
It'll be really interesting to see because they're re-releasing it to cinemas, I think, next year in 3D post-conversion. It'll be interesting to see how that holds up, all those special effects and so forth.
That's true. And it's also interesting to note that the sequel is now in the works.
Yes, and I think that's one of the reasons they're trying to get this back in front of people's minds again.
Interesting stuff. All right,
because it was 1996, that film.
Yeah, it was. It was a long time. I remember seeing it at the cinema and just being awestruck by some.
Oh, me
of the,
too.
By some of the the devastation.
I'll tell you what. I'd finished my final high school exams, and I went and saw that film. That was
now
my reward.
You're making me feel old. All right, you're number two.
Number two stays in New York. How can I put this?
It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Again?
look, I tried to think of something that could never possibly harm. I honestly love that movie. Obviously, I've mentioned it once or twice, but it is such a big explosion, and not very few explosions end with people covered in marshmallows.
That's true. We're going to have to count it up, though. We may end up vaulting that film.
Oh, look, I'd say it's probably vaulted now. But
you'd be surprised. We actually, when we first did a count of all our lists, we thought, oh, God, there's going to be dozens of films. There was one film vaulted. And it's like, wow, that really is amazing. You don't. So anyway,
but I mean, before that, there's a few good explosions in that film as well. There's like, you know, when the roof of the firehouse blows out, and there's the top of that building blows off as well.
And when she looks out the window and the wall blows away in front of her.
Yeah. There's so many of those in that film. It's actually quite a lot of action in that film when you think back on it.
Look, Ghostbusters is a classic. You know, it's a great film.
It's got everything from action to comedy to sci-fi to, yeah. You know, whatever your bag is, that film's
got. It's a good film. My number two is A Real World Explosion, which was actually the opening scene from Lethal Weapon 3, where they're basically cut the wrong wire, have to run, and the entire building blows up because of the bomb. In actual fact, it was a real building that they were going to demolish. And so the city reached out to the filmmakers and said, we're going to demolish this building. Would you like to film it? And they said, hells yeah. And they did. It wasn't even in the script. They actually wrote the scene for the film just so they could incorporate the fact that they were going to blow the crap out of a building. And they actually went there and spent a couple of weeks pre-rigging the building. So on top of the explosives for the actual demolition, they needed to make lots of fire and smoke and everything. So they actually re-rigged the building, and that explosion at the beginning of Lethal Weapon 3 is a real building going down. And wow, it is impressive.
That's big.
That's an impressive explosion. So it had to go on the list. All right, round's the number one. You're number one.
My number one is, of course, Dr. Strangelove, all the nuclear explosions at the end of that film.
Good call, good call.
Yeah. How can you beat the whole world blowing up?
Absolutely. Mine's not nearly as impressive as that. I just like a good fireball, and a good fireball can be seen in a lot of Michael Bay films, but in particular, the very first Bad Boys. The finale to that film, when all the helium goes up, is it helium or hydrogen or whatever it is, the drums of gas basically in the drug making plant, and the three of them walking heroically towards camera with that enormous fireball going off behind them is a very impressive explosion indeed. So I really like that. And apparently that explosion was paid for by Bay. Because they'd run out of money at that stage, and he was denied, and he said, "Screw it, I'll pay for it myself." So there you go.
If you indulge me for a second, I'll just a couple of my runners up. The end of The Rock. Speaking of Michael Bay, it's got a pretty impressive explosion. There was one I had on my list for a long time.
Yep.
The Die Hard building explosion.
That was actually on my list for a long time. I ended up ditching it at the last minute.
I ditched it because I thought
we're going to need a shitload of screen doors.
Yeah. The napalming in Apocalypse Now.
Oh, yes. That's amazing.
Jaws, smile, you son of a bitch.
I can't see it. Jaws is vaulted.
Of course. Jaws is vaulted.
I can't do Jaws. That's why I would have used that.
The ending of Fight Club, of course.
Yes, yes.
And the hospital from The Dark Knight.
Of course, which is also a real building.
Yes.
Yeah. Not nearly as flamboyant as a Joel Silver explosion, but still very impressive. It's a good. It's a good collapse.
It's a very good collapse.
Yeah.
So there's all that. And there's about 50 more I could have included, but a lot of things are blown up in films.
Absolutely. If you guys out there have a favorite explosion on film, send it to us at feedback@filmactually.com.
No, just send us the name of it. Don't send us the explosion.
No, don't send us the explosion. Send us the name of the film. And if we haven't seen it, we can go watch it because we like seeing things go boom. So
we're simple folk.
We're simple folk. We like to see things go boom. Send us your suggestions at feedback@filmactually.com. If you agree or disagree with anything we've had to say about The Dark Knight or anything else tonight, feedback@filmactually.com. Or you can send us a voicemail at 02-801-1-3167 or use the Skype ID GeekActually. We don't have feedback tonight, so we can actually get out of here at a reasonable hour.
You call this reasonable?
Well, you know, reasonable, kind of.
It's still today.
It is. It's still Monday. All right. Let's see if we can finish the show while it's still Monday. All right. Now, what was I going to say? Richard, where can people find more of you on the internet?
They can find me at therealbits.com. That's the RWLBits.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
Now, you promised us Michael Caine as Bane.
Oh, right. how do I do that? First of all, I've got to get Michael Caine. Right. And whether or not I just do Michael Caine. There we go through this voice thing here. Or whether I have to do Michael Caine. Say, I give you permission to die, Master Bruce.
A valiant effort. Well done. I think Sean Connery works better than Michael Caine.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can find me at geekactually.com. We're on Twitter at David McVeigh, and normally Josh is with us, so you can find him at rawdlc.com for his gaming show, or hiphopnetonline.com for his music website. We should also throw a quick shout out to our good old buddies over in America. We've got the Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies. They're on iTunes, or you can find them at the website weekendronan.com. They do a film reviews website, a film review podcast, I should say, like ours, except they like to drink them. Although the way I'm slurring right now, you'd think I was drunk. they like to do it while drinking tequila.
Yeah, baby, I am.
They like to do it while drinking tequila, which makes for a very fun time. And they've got a bunch of new episodes, I've noticed. And so I'm looking forward to I'm about four episodes behind, so I've got to go catch up on some of their episodes. That's it. We opened the show with a clip from The Dark Knight, obviously. That's the amazing Heath Ledger doing his Joker bit. And we are going to end the show with the classic Batman theme, basically, from the Batman films. This current run of Batman films, the Hans Zimmer, James Newton Howard Batman theme, which is always a lot of fun to listen to. Josh, I keep doing that. Why do I keep doing that? Richard, have you got any more to add to this mess of an ending?
Not if you keep calling me Josh.
See, I've got this looming spirit of Josh hanging over my head. Maybe it's because...
Give us all your money.
Yeah, there he is.
it's good to hear his voice.
Yeah, there he is. All right, guys. Everybody out there, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will be back next week with Magic Might. Right on, right on, right on.
Right on.
What is it? There's a lot of lawbreakers out there.
Open here.
All right, so we'll see you all next week for Magic Mike. Bye, Richard.
Goodbye, David.